Hey, it's your girl Cheryl. And it's your girl Cheryl and the Old School News Crew here to talk about what's going on all around the world. And, you know, we love doing it every week. We also like having our regulars join us, the Old School News Crew. We've got Brooke Barrick.
Hey, hey.
We've got Sheila Gaskins.
Hi, y'all.
And we've got Winston Thomas.
Oh, yeah, toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Let
with me put bass.
For that one. Toodaloo, dear. Toodaloo.
We're down one panelist, Mike Easterling. He's not going to be with us tonight, but that's okay. We're going to hold up the conversation with just us because so much is going on. We got a lot of opinions and viewpoints that we want to share. Until then, though, but remember, if you ever want to join us and share your opinions as well, please just email me at yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com. And let me know when you want to come on, what you want to talk about, and we'll fit you in, okay? That'll work.
Don't cut and paste, because if you had to cut and paste, that's a whole different thing.
That's a private joke. Nobody will get
that. I know, right? I don't know how private it is.
Anyway, some stuff has been going on this week that has really been bothering me, and I want to talk about it. And it's the effort, in a lot of different ways, of people trying to change history, trying to erase history. And they're coming at it in all different ways. You know, I want to say it's the GOP, but it's not only the GOP. But I will start off with this decision or this seemingly, this opposition to create a commission to talk about January 6th and what happened and the insurrection. And this ongoing conversation by the GOP, members of the GOP, that say that it didn't happen, that it was just a regular tourist day, even though there's pictures and video and sound, people's deaths, whatever, it doesn't matter. They're out there saying that this didn't happen. So, you know, the whole idea of just, like I said, erasing history, how are we gonna stop this? Or I mean, how is this something that is just growing? Because you got a lot of members of the GOP that are, you know, are supporting this conversation.
I know y'all gonna get real sick of me talking about psychopaths and sociopaths, but this is a really simple technique and we call it gaslighting. And when they try to tell you something that you know to be true, they try to tell you that the opposite is true and that you're the crazy one and that somehow or another you missed it. That is typical, just baseline 101 gaslighting. And it is a technique that psychopaths use all the time to keep their targets off base.
It's the way are we saying that all senators are psychopaths? Are we saying
a lot of them?
Well, yeah.
The GOP? Oh, heck yeah. Yes. Yes, I am. I am saying that.
Because I just can't, like you said, the idea that, like I said, it's one thing to say, you know, what you saw is not what you saw. You know what I mean? You know, people do that if they're, you know, just trying to get away with something. But this is too massive for that.
This is too what?
Massive for that. I mean, just like the George Floyd thing, we all saw that happen in real time. It wasn't like somebody sent a video later. We all watched these people scale the walls of the Capitol.
But you didn't see what you thought you saw.
I mean, see, and the idea that you could make people doubt that is beyond me. I don't even know how to deal with that.
I'm gonna say this real quick and then I'm gonna let everybody else take over this conversation, but real talk. One of the things the psychopath I used to live with used to do, and he called it waiting until the dust settled, figuring that if enough time had passed, he could start screwing with the actual facts of what took place and was consistent with it, right? And it's the same thing you see happening all throughout the Trump administration, which is how they have gotten away. Like every time, and Cheryl, you were the queen of it, right? Every time something would happen, we would be like, of course they're going to get it now because this is so blatantly obvious. And then, yeah, it didn't happen, right? Because they waited and then they started spinning that back truth.
Well, that's true. That's true. We have been watching them do that quite a bit.
Yeah, well, the other side. Oh, go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say that's a tactic that they use. They did that whole thing for the Breonna Taylor situation. The DA, he wanted to wait it all out so that, you know, people's minds can change and thoughts can be differently. So that's a pattern of that madness. that apparently is effective.
Yeah, it must be effective because I don't understand why questions are even being asked. I understand that they want to give the appearance of this bipartisan government where, you know, everyone is heard fairly, but this, you know, we're past that. We're done. So we're controlling the White House and we've got a, you know, an equal footing, if not control of the Congress. We need to take advantage of that and just move ahead. Don't ask the Republicans if we're going to have an investigation. Tell them we're having one and invite them to participate if they like. If they don't, fine. And we should just move right ahead. The facts are clear. But they do. They drag their feet on everything and time goes past. You got new distractions and then everybody's got some BS to throw in the mix.
Well, man, why do you think, though, that the Democrats, like you said, they are not taking control of this thing? If the Republicans are going to do this, you expect then the Democrats to just say, okay, we realize that that's how you can act, so we're just going to move forward. But they don't. They keep on going back for the bipartisan participation or for the discussion on it, when they could just, you know, like you said, just move it forward. Just, you know, okay, y'all going to do that. We'll just keep this going because we know that's not accurate. Why are the Democrats not?
Well, you know, don't get me started, but
no, that's why you're on here to get you started. That's the point.
Look, I'll use Brooke's favorite phrase. At the end of the day, they're all on the same team.
White solidarity.
Yep. They really don't want to go too hard on each other. You know, they're colleagues. They still refer to each other as colleagues. And either that's true or it's not, but they're acting like they're all in this together. They're very gentle with each other, no matter what they do.
You almost got me there, Winston, except for the GOP really don't give a flip. They're just like, they will go hardball. They will play soft when it serves them. They are blatantly manipulative. Mitch McConnell actually said it without using the word hypocritical, that, yeah, he knew what he was doing with the Amy Comer thing. You know, like, he knew that they did what they did to Obama, and the difference, we're in power. And they were just straight up with it. The Democrats still try to roll the moral high ground. They try to roll the moral high ground. They really do. So at the end of the day, when we can turn around and say very clearly that the Republicans didn't play ball, we can point our fingers at them. And we are actually, honestly, this is the long game, right? Because as you will notice, there are more and more Republicans who are juggling with their own. Cheney, who just got ousted from her positions. Wait a minute, what? Right? So when these things start to happen, I know at least five Republicans who went, am I on still?
Oh, no, man. You're good. You're good now.
Okay.
You're good now.
So I know at least five Republicans who went Republican to independent that are now full-blown Democrats just since Trump got elected. Five. That's crazy. Like, people are not putting up with this anymore. They're just looking. And so playing that long game for those people in the Republican Party who are voters and their constituents who really are like, wait a minute, you know, because they're supposedly, you know, the moral majority and Christian, and, you know, that's part of their makeup. Some of them really are looking at their own party like, y'all lost your damn minds, and they're flipping the switch. But if we start going toe to toe and that moral high ground starts to slip and we start really truly looking like them and the way that they've behaved for the last 12 years, It won't hold.
But see, I don't think it's one or the other. I don't think either you have to take the moral high ground like the Democrats or be down here in the gutter with the GOP. There's some place in the middle. And the thing that I don't see Democrats doing, let me say this, the thing that I see Republicans doing, and they do very well, is that they stick to their talking points and they all stay on the same page. And they all, you know, this is what we're saying and we're all saying it and we don't care how crazy it sounds, we're all going for it. The few that don't go along, you barely hear from them except for Liz Cheney.
They kick them out.
They kick them out. But
you heard from her. But you only heard from her because she was Liz Cheney. I mean, there are like maybe a couple of others, but you don't hear from them as much. But she got a lot of visibility and she will continue to do so because she's Liz Cheney. You know, but generally.
And Mitt Romney is another.
Right. But everybody else, you know, all the other Republicans, they're going to stick to their points and they're very visible and they're very vocal and they get a lot of attention. The Democrats don't do that. They watched Mitch McConnell put that Supreme Court nominee up within days after not letting Obama have his up for a year. And the Democrats just sort of over to the side said, you know, that wasn't right. But they didn't make a big deal about it. They should have. They should have pointed out the point, because once I heard Mitch McConnell literally say, we did it because we could, you know, as soon as he said that, you know, like you said, we're in power and we can. That should have right then should have been more visible to show how disrespectful and unfair and whatever they were going to be. But the Democrats just sort of, you know, they don't have that. They need a PR team or they need something. They need a marketing strategy or something.
I won't go so far as to say that they did nothing, because the flag that they waved was, yeah, try it and see if we don't create a bigger Supreme Court, because we are well within our constitutional right to do that. And right, so that's become a conversation. The other conversation that's come, again, they play the long game, right? Because the next thing that's also been put on the table is the notion of DC statehood. DC has been trying to become a state for decades, yeah. Mm-hmm. But now, that's a serious conversation. Mm-hmm. And I bet somebody, I told them, I said, I give them 8 years before this next administration is over. I bet you that DC will be a state.
Yeah, I think that the events of January 6th sort of gave that a big push, because part of the reason that the security wasn't there the way it could have been there was because DC wasn't a state and didn't have the authority to move that forward. To call in whatever department needed to be called in, they couldn't do it because they weren't a state. And had they been, things might have turned out a little differently.
And within the last 10 years, DC has grown by something ridiculous, like 13% in population. They went from 600,000 mm-hmm. to over 700,000 within 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that population swing has, remember, we used to call DC the chocolate city once upon a day, right? It ain't mm-hmm. no more.
I know.
Part of the reason that is because of that influx of people. And now that the city is white majority, please. They ain't gonna, white people are not gonna be, what do you mean I don't have a senator? Or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I see it too. I do think that they're gonna get their statehood within this administration, actually.
But I believe the other part too is that the Democrats don't wanna, everybody has appearances and they don't wanna be fighting. They don't want America to see in-house fighting. They would rather be peaceful or compromising than to sit up there and fight the Republicans for every little thing.
Diplomatic.
Right, diplomatic. And so I believe that they don't want to be that party to fight every little thing like the Republicans. I think they do their dirt differently. And I think they let them let them be the bucket heads that they are and let America see how stupid they are or whatever. And then they will act. But mm-hmm. I don't think they want to be out here fighting like
that. And actually, I did hear somebody on TV say that one of the anchors on one of these talk shows, that the Democrats, it looks like they're not doing anything, but they're doing what they're doing behind the scenes more than the Republicans, as opposed to Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene out there, you know, doing MAGA rallies. Wow, they're not out there visible like that. They're back in the court system doing some other things to make some changes. But this whole idea about changing history, you know, I want people to say it like that instead of using some other terminology. To deny what happened January 6th is a particular effort to change history, as so is this idea of, in another way, not giving tenure to Nicole Hannah Green, is that right? Is that her last name? Right. The woman who wrote the 1619 Project. She's a MacArthur Genius Fellow. She's won a Pulitzer Prize. And all I have to say is, what's a Black woman got to do? You mean that with all of that, she's not, because you know none of her colleagues have done all of that. And she doesn't get tenure, but she doesn't get it because she actually wrote what history, some truths about history that we didn't know. And certain people don't like that. And that is so clear. But the fact that that can be allowed, that they can just try to wipe out what she said, you know, or what she has researched and proven to be true, amazes me. Like I said, this effort to just erase history or say, I don't want my child learning that, it's not your choice. You know, if that's history, that's what it is, you know?
This is not, she ain't the first one though, because there was another very well-known individual who did not get tenure this year.
Yeah, I didn't know what. West. Right, exactly.
Who's the person?
Cornel West did not get tenure at Harvard.
And I don't
I'm all
understand.
Right with that, though. I'm all right with that. I got a little thing with Cornel right now.
Just because you got a little thing with him doesn't mean he don't deserve tenure.
I got a thing with him, too, but I still think he deserves his tenure.
You know? Thank you.
Because that I don't understand it. I mean, I haven't read the list of all the criteria for tenure, but I do know that part of it is the research that you do, and even if this isn't on the list, the notoriety that you bring to your school based on your academic scholarship should be worth something. And what Cornel West has done for Harvard, what Hannah Nicole, Green. What they have done for their respective schools is remarkable. Nobody else has done that for their school, you know? So how in the world is it that these people, and I don't mean just because they're popular or they're well-known or because they're celebrities, it's not just that. They have done the academic research, historical research that's required for tenure. So I don't understand who is getting tenure if they didn't. I don't get that.
Also, there's a
white history, people.
There's a history of people who went to the school, benefactors, funders. All of these people have to agree, and they really don't want that reputation for their school. The information that these people found out, it's embarrassing.
But rebel rousers, the rebel rousers.
I don't know why y'all tripping. It's like these people discovered that they are racist and their institutions are racist, and so they're going to let them go down in history and be a part of that. Don't nobody want that.
But we already know that. I mean, we've already documented that slavery happened. So you already been deemed racist. I mean, that's already the history. So what more is, go ahead.
It's their fault because they didn't pick topics that were more palatable and marketable for the institution. That's what white people will tell them, right? Just like they tell us when we get a degree in African-American history or whatever, you know, well, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to sell that? Da, 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 da. So at the end of the day, because they don't consider those to be marketable or important topics.
Or they don't feel good. They're topics that are hurtful. And that's why they're trying to get rid of this critical race theory. They are literally going to the powers that be to say, you cannot talk about this, or you cannot teach about this, or you will be fined.
Where people are taking their kids out of school if they think that this is going to be taught in schools. But Black people have had their kids in schools for years learning stuff that we know is not true. So is the answer for Black people to take people of color to take their children out of school today? Because that's been going on. You know, we could take our kids out of school now for the same reason.
Pretty much.
Black people ain't going to do that though.
This brings up
that. It's white folk that are upset about little Johnny learning about his ancestors and the harm that they caused. That's making little Johnny think like not like his race.
What? Being taught not to like yourself? What?
Little Johnny. Yes, little Johnny's like, oh no,
America?
My great-great-grandparents owned other people.
But little Johnny already knows that.
To Jamal.
But little Johnny already knows. Little Johnny already knows that. That we've already determined.
Does little Johnny know that? Does he?
Yeah.
Wait. Because Tulsi Gabbard. So I don't know if we talked. Are we talking about this tonight? I don't know. But you heard about the mayor in Chicago who's refusing any journalists that are white to come in for a 101.
I saw that. I just saw that today, actually.
Boy, has that created some Twitter. My Twitter feed is blowing up. But this whole thing where Tulsi Gabbard came out about anti-whiteness, and I'm like, we all should be anti-white. White simply means
Nobody got to be anti-white after we doing all this anti-black. They need to get original.
No. But hear me. Because whiteness, by definition, is the creation of racism. By creating a white race, that's how you imply that if you are not white, if you have any ounce of anything in you, because I mean, all of us sitting here got some European descent. Let's face it, right? But the fact that we have just a little inkling of some African up in us means that we're not white. Whiteness is that thing that makes racism what it is. And so until they deal with that crap, white people should be anti-white.
Yeah, because I've always thought that the idea that if you had a drop of black blood in you, it made you black, that was something that was determined, you know, back when slavery first came here. And the fact that we still to this day define black people as people who just have a touch of black in you. Like if you've got that much in you, that, you know, you're over there. And
it's all a bunch of fakery, because if you think about the Italians. Now, what mixes that? Technically, they have African in them as well. But now, when they first hit the States, they were treated almost as badly as blacks. However, over time, now they are almost accepted as normal whites. So this whole thing is insane. But I noticed that Italians will, they hold their head up high as whites now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about it is, historically speaking, even white people have this thing that they refer to as less white, but you still had to be European, right? So if it was non-European, you weren't white. But if you're European and maybe Italian or European and Polish or Turkish, you're white, you're just less white. Less white. What does that even mean? But that actually was a historical thing. So Winston is like 100% right on that tip with regard to the stratification within whiteness that white people had so that they could have a caste within their own race. Mm. It was nuts.
But you're right that is another topic, and that's a very big topic. But the idea that your whiteness doesn't give you the authority to determine history or rewrite history or select history or anything else.
It has to date.
I've heard about the idea that the map that we use, the globe, the way our map is, the world map, is not really accurate, that the dimensions are off, because of an effort by certain people to make it look, you don't get to change. It is what it is, And the idea that there are people out there who are trying to change it in all these different ways. And the fact that we're allowing it, that's the part. Because you can only do something if somebody allows you to do it, And so my question is, how do we stop that? How do you stop?
You don't. You need to be empowered to stop things.
Number one.
We don't control anything.
No, I control my own mind. So you can, like I'm saying, like Sheila had
That's
just.
It.
Do you? Do you really?
That we're not going to take our kids out of school. Maybe just, I've always been amazed at the little girl who, you know, back when they were trying to break the segregation situation in the South. And Ruby, the little girl who, she's walking, little pictures of her walking
Ruby
with her
little Bridges. School.
Ruby Bridges, right. And she's walking with all the police around her. You thought and she didn't have any power. You could say she didn't have any power, but her parents used that little girl to change that whole system. Okay, so we do have power. It just, I mean, depends on what the cost. George Floyd, has changed a lot, but the cost, look at the cost. So I don't know what it's gonna cost us, but you don't get to change my history. So what do I have to do? If I had to take my kids out of school and say, I'm no longer gonna let you teach my child lies. Either you're gonna teach the truth or my child's coming out of this school. If we
and then they arrest you for truancy. And then they arrest you for truancy, courtesy of your girl, Kamala Harris.
I can homeschool my children or I can take them somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? And again, but the price might be high, even if that was the case. The price might be high, but are we going to do it? When Sheila said that, no, we're not going to do that. Is that because you think the price is too high? And Sheila, that's why we wouldn't do that? Or
No, but we don't have to take our kids out of school because we know the history. So if they're going to stop us
to the degree that Nicole Hannah Green, I keep wanting to say her name differently, and I do apologize, but the degree that she wrote 1619, I don't know that history. I mean, I know the general history that I was taught in school about slavery and about this and that, but there was a lot more in there that she wrote about that I wasn't as aware of. So, I mean, I'd like to study it. I'd like to, if I had kids, I would want them to know the full history of.
Right. And so, and because you want that, that is something that they're not having. They don't want the teachers to teach that. They don't want the teachers to teach about race or oppression. Those are topics that they want to change. They no longer want that to be a part of social studies or history. So that's what they're cutting out of.
I'm sort of blown that you all keep referring to it as though they're stopping this thing that's always been. It's never been. What's happening is that people are now demanding that something that's never been in the curriculum be there. And be there in force. And at the end of the day, all of this ties back to the same exact thing, which Winston's going to love hearing me say this, which is white people are not trying to relinquish the power and the hold that they have in this country. And even our people who have brainwashed themselves into believing that they are allies, they are not ready for this. The cognitive dissonance is messing with their brain. Even you just mentioned something about all these changes since George Floyd. Are you ready for this? Just like pre-pandemic and pollution, pre-George Floyd and the backlash of all of the Black Lives Matter and people being outspoken about the Black experience, anti-Black Lives Matter sentiments have increased recently to the point that they are beyond what they were before George Floyd. Pollution is higher than it was before the pandemic. Backlash. People are only willing to tolerate so much change. And when they snap back with a vengeance. And this whole thing about getting the history right after last year, white people ain't ready for that.
What I'm saying is Black people apparently ain't ready for that, because if they're not willing to bite the bullet and say what I want taught in the school, in my schools, should be accurate. And it wasn't accurate before, you know, and we're asking for it to be more accurate now. So you don't want to let that happen. But we're saying even before it wasn't accurate. So, I don't understand.
Let me ask this real quick. And I get in trouble for this, but in reality, what effect does that have? In other words, what difference does it make? Let me ask that question. All right, history is taught in the school. What are we going to see, or what do we expect to see? A greater sense of pride or something?
Winston, you're a strange one to ask this question because you and I have had this conversation before. This particular thing, there is a difference in, if you've learned in the past that in the reason slavery happened was because white folks came up, went over to Africa and saw the black savages and said, get on this boat, took out their guns and said, get on this boat. And all the black people went, oh, and they got on the boat, okay? Now, your issue is why didn't they fight? Why would they let these white people just put them on the boat? Now, if the difference in what you learn in school is that the black people went, oh, and got on the boat, as opposed to pulling out their guns or their spears or whatever they had and fighting, that's two different versions of a story. And it's an important difference, you know, and I'd like to know. So,
No, that's not what I asked them. Now that you know, assume you know.
No, so that's the difference in what you
would learn. How does it affect your life now? That's my
point. It could very well affect your life to know.
I'm asking how.
What to know? Go ahead, Brooke.
There's a horn beeping in the background, so I just want to hang
side. Oh, I thought you wanted to say something. I think the difference is to live your life as a people who were brought here, who were captured and brought here, is one thing. To live your life knowing that you come from, like now, a lot of times you hear people talk about, teach their kids that they were born of African kings and queens and things like that. You know, that's a different kind of thing than to think that you were just somebody who was scared and got on the boat.
The other thing is that white people needing to know truly the atrocities, like number one, Thomas Jefferson lived with his wife's sister / sex slave and had children with her, and that his wife's sister was property. Like that in and of itself is a way to look at history in such a way that if you have any empathetic bone in your body, it will shift how you look at the experience of people who have African DNA, right? And when you begin to look at things like, no, George Washington's teeth were not wood, they were actually the teeth of slaves.
Slave teeth.
Yeah. You start going, hold up. You know, my forefathers, like this allegiance to this flag and this constitution, it gets a little shaky. Like it has a shift.
And it's interesting.
And so when you start looking at.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So when people are presented with the truth, like for example.
Well, wait a minute.
When you start.
Before you go to your example, because you were talking about Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, because I wanted to make the point when, I won't say when the story first came out, but there was a point when that story came out that they made it sound like Thomas Jefferson was in love with Sally Hemings. And unfortunately she was a slave, but he took her as his wife and put up with, you know, and like he was a greater man because he did this. And then now I think there was even a movie that sort of took that approach to it. But then you sort of found out that no, the girl was 14 when she came to live with him. You know, she wasn't in love with her white owner. She was his slave. And you know, that's a different way to look at the story.
Well, you know,
it changes how you view one of the forefathers of this country. And so Brooke, you know, I agree with Brooke's point that, you know, it does make you, it helps you create your view of.
Well, you know, you and Brooke actually kind of answered the question for all of us. The reason they don't, and I, you know, there's a certain amount of validity in this. The reason they don't want all of those thoughts and they don't want you looking down on the founders, you're screwing up the propaganda. We got to keep this thing going. If the moral fabric and the belief in America, the flag, the pledge to allegiance, if all of that starts breaking down, what are we going to be left with?
Well, that's why you got people wearing MAGA hats, Make America Great Again, because they believe that America is great, has always been great, and blah, blah. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that America has had its issues in the past, and there have been things that have happened here that were not so great. But those folks don't want to admit that. And sometimes it's not up to you to admit. It's a fact. That's what history is. And that's what we're fighting about. You've got to explain, you've got to accept the history for what it was, if it's history, you know?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it was Rick Santorum, it was somebody. He had his little bit, but this started a big controversy. He said to, I think he said to Don Lemon or somebody one night, he said, yeah, we came here and we took things, you know, we took over from the Native Americans, but you got to realize there was nothing here. It was freaking wilderness. These guys had, look, those Native Americans, they hadn't done anything with this place. We came in and, hey, you got cable now, baby, you know? So they were like, you know, that was all that evil working us, doing us the way they did us in their minds. That was, you know, that was justified. For the greater good.
Justified.
Yes. Look at what we have now because of that evil. You know, we had to do what we had to do.
And that is literally the definition of white supremacy, literally. Yep. And yet people think that white supremacy is some lunatic fringe mob, like thinking that all Black people are evil. No, it is the notion that if you have a little bit of something in your blood, then you aren't 100% pure, therefore you're not white, therefore you're less than. It is the notion that we're doing the world a favor by colonizing it. That is white supremacy by definition. And people just, that just makes their little brains blow up. It's pretty fascinating to watch.
But keep this in mind. And you know, I just, maybe in the last 15 years, I realized this. It's not all whites sticking together. They have classes within the whites. In other words, and Brooke, you know this, all whites could not afford slaves. And that distinction right there pretty much separated the elites from, you know, the poor white trash, so to speak. And that continues. So, you know, just because you're white, that doesn't mean you're on the in circle. That doesn't mean you're rich, you know. So make that distinction too.
That's the irony of ironies, Winston, because all of us are literally in lineage of slaveholders. So we're the ones with the rich ancestors.
So you're right. Not all white people had slaves. It was right. A very small number, but the rules of slavery applied to all white people. So I had to be obedient, not only to my master, I had to be obedient everybody. True. So that's why this is so insidious and crazy, because it don't make a difference if it was 10 slaveholders. The rules applied to me as an enslaved person to all white people. And that's not cool.
And then people act like when slavery ended, all of this just went away, right? But then you had the Black Codes and the 13th Amendment, and then followed by Jim Crow laws and segregation. And I'm just like, dude, y'all just really don't want to see. You don't want to admit what you know.
Mm-hmm. And even I had just heard yesterday, the day before, the statistic that 25%, that white heterosexual Christian men make up 25% of this country, but they hold 80% of the power in this country. And that has gone down from 90% from just a few years ago. But they are fighting to keep it from going down to 75%.
Right, yes.
So the fight is not to have everybody be equal. They don't want everybody to be equal. They want to have majority control over everybody, no matter what. Now that right there,
and
talk about something being ridiculous or being unfit.
And then let's add this in. The Republicans, where they are, if they're not going to be in control, they have no use for this democracy BS. They're like, we can let that go if we're not going to be in charge, which is why they cut it up so tight with Putin, all right, in 2016. Remember they were going over there, meeting with him, you know, they've got photos, all the meetings they've had together, all of them. Flynn, I forgot the woman that was running, I forget her name, but what was Brooke? I know you know. What was the white woman's name? Yeah, Brooke knows everything.
I know.
The white woman that was running between Hillary and Trump.
Jill.
Yes.
Jill Stein. Was it Jill Stein?
Stein, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's over there.
It was Green Party and she was over there. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So their thing is, forget democracy if we're not going to be in control. So
that's right.
They're willing to sell us out in a heartbeat.
Well, just the idea that the country shouldn't be majority run. It's just like if you were to go on a camping trip with a group of friends and there are 10 of you and you're trying to decide where to set up camp, and out of the 10, 8 of you decide you want to be right here by the pond and the other 2 want to be over there in the woods, then we're going to do what the 2 want because they're the majority, they're the minority, but they're bigger than we are, so they're going to fight us. No. If the majority of us want to be here, why would the 2 even think that it's going to be where they want when the majority of people want this? So I don't understand why people who are in the minority of thought, no matter whether it's your view on housing or abortion or education, if you are in the minority, if the majority of people want this one thing, who are you to decide for the majority?
Well, that would be us as Black people, Cheryl, because we ain't in the majority. who are we?
people of color.
Well, there is a time when that is valid, that thinking is valid, but what they base this democracy on, you know, everything's for we the
people. It's a republic.
Yeah, but I will admit, Joe Q average don't need to be, we don't need to be doing what he thinks. I guarantee you that. So you do have to, lean on the people with the most intellect, the most knowledge, training, experience, expertise.
If the majority of people want gun control, why would, if 80% of this country decides that they want you to register if you're going to buy a gun, why would we do what the 20% want if 80% want that?
On that topic, I agree.
No, I mean, I'm saying just in a general sense, so unless it is that the majority of white people all want people of color to be over there somewhere living in substandard housing, I don't think that's the case. I think it's a minority. It's a growing minority, whereas I would have thought it might have been 10%, it might be more like 40%,
The majority of white people voted for Trump. The majority, I need you to get this.
Yeah, okay.
If you run into a white person, the odds are better than 50% that they voted for Trump. That is not a stereotype, that's a statistic.
Both times.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's despite what they say to you. If you ask them, they're like, oh no, hell with Trump. Okay.
But he won, but Biden won because along with the white people who didn't vote for Trump and people of color voted for Biden. So, and they make up the majority. And we should be doing what the majority wants,
Okay.
Except for we have an electoral college. And South Dakota has as many senators as New York and California. So there's that.
So I don't know. We're going to have to come up with some specific ways that we're going to address this issue, this erasing history and, in particular.
But they've been erasing history. This is not even new. Like all of our history has been history being erased. Every history lesson that you've ever taught or you were ever taught in high school and college, the whole nine yards, has been erasing history.
Or I'll give you one better. Or was never taught to you in the first place.
That's erasing it. If it happened and you don't talk about it, you're erasing it.
Right.
Speaking of that, is everybody going to watch LeBron?
Winston, then Sheila.
LeBron James produced about
the Tulsa massacre. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I'm sure we're going to get some fun facts from that.
And actually, I just posted on Facebook. It's a, I think it's an NPR. I'm not sure if it's an NPR piece, but it's a radio piece about that same topic. So if you want to get a chance to hear that, I think it's either a podcast or a recording or a program that talks about that as well. So, because I think his show comes on next weekend.
No, that's tonight, I think.
Oh, it's tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be this weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I'll check for it now.
9 o'clock, CNN, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, so we need to get off the phone pretty soon. Okay. But I don't want to get off until we touch on this other topic. It's a switch from what we've been talking about, but I've been seeing this on Facebook and I said, I have to bring this up because I didn't want to say what I really thought. I wrote a little bit, but not so much. I've been seeing a lot of photographs lately on Facebook of young women, Black women in particular, on their knees, proposing marriage to their significant other, I guess. And the one photo I saw, the woman was pregnant, very pregnant, like 7-8 months, on her knees with a ring, asking the guy to marry her. Now, what do we think about this trend, Old School News Crew? Does anybody want to make a comment before I say something?
I just want to say that where there's judgment, there is no love. And if women are getting on their knees asking men to marry them, then they are doing that for a reason. Having a significant other who was a drug addict and I knew could not provide for me, I had to be the leader in that relationship. I knew that he couldn't do certain stuff. And I knew that marriage would be great for the kids. So I'm assuming that these women are taking leadership roles and they are trying to combine a family with a partner that ain't gonna do it. He ain't gonna do it. So that, I guess this is their way of justifying that. So, you know, whatever floats your boat, I say go for it.
Brooke?
you know me, especially when it comes to gender roles, just do you, boo, right? And my bigger question as a person who will die single if I have it my way, why? Just why?
Why the proposal or why marriage?
Why marriage at all?
Yeah.
Just why? I found out the hard way when I was in the process of doing my divorce. No, actually, it was while I was married. There were several things that happened while I was married that I was like, wait a minute, what? I had a retirement account that I had started when I was 19 years old. And when I went to go borrow against it, I had to get my husband's permission. I went, what? None of that money was his. None of it. But because we got married, all of it was ours. And I was, yeah, anyway, my money.
Now I can understand that thought. Winston, as the man on the panel.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything wrong with a woman expressing her desire to her mate that she wants to be married. I don't know what all the get down on one knee is all about. I mean, I guess that's tradition, you know. So okay, great. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But it just seems like if a person has to be asked, you know, somebody's got to ask. I feel like you know it. If you want to be with a person, I think both people know it. And I think it's something they come to together more so than asking. I think this proposing is more of a tradition that people just try to live up to. I think it's got a little fakery involved in it. I don't think you have to go through that ceremony. People know, hey, I love you. Let's do this. We want to be together forever. Yeah. So you just go ahead and do it. I don't think, you know, we have to go through all this, you know, getting your knees all scuffed up and all that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, if you love each other and you want to be together, then damn it, just do it. You don't even have to do the legal commitment. Just do it.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I just have to say, though, that two things. One about what Winston just said. One thing I never understand is why somebody asks somebody to marry them when they don't know what the answer is going to be. How do you even fake yourself into a thought that somebody is going to say, yeah? If you've been in a relationship with somebody, you sort of would know whether or not they're going to say yes. And particularly when you do it publicly, And then the person says, no, I mean, what would give you the thought that they were going to say yes? So that's one thing. So I don't see you early making that request unless you just think it's a tradition, you know, unless you really, you already sort of know if you and that person are on that track and, you know, are willing to do that. But my issue about these women on their knees buying a ring for a man is more about just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. I don't have a problem with, you know, whatever, you know, whatever you all want to do is fine. That is it. Whatever you do want to do is fine. And women have equal rights with men if they want to do that. But I think what it said, but it says something when you do that. And I think you set a foundation for your relationship when you do that. And if you're pregnant, if you're 7 months pregnant, and I'm assuming the guy in the picture is the father of the child, if you have to get down on your knees and buy a man a ring that you're already pregnant with his baby, and he hasn't made that step, that says something about who he is and what his integrity is. And if you don't think that's gonna come back at you later in the relationship, then you're mistaken, because that's who he is. That's the kind of man he is, okay? And as your lives move forward, he's gonna demonstrate that over and over again. You know,
and that's something that people have to accept. And right, so, and
if you're willing to accept that, more power to you, but don't ever go to your mama crying about this or crying about, no, that's who you married.
And you know, knew who he was. And if that person wanted to do that, they can do that.
That's
their house.
How I said, if you want to do it, fine, but be aware.
But the other part too is that it's probably a non-traditional relationship anyway, because I know in my situation, I like to work. He loved to stay home and took care of the kids. That was perfect for me. I needed that. I wanted that in my life. But you know, not to say that I would get on my knees, but I can understand why people are moving forward, because that will not come from him. It ain't gonna happen.
And also, and this may not be fair, but I think women are giving up an advantage that they have when they do that. You know, my mother used to talk about men putting you on a pedestal to find a man who's going to put you on a pedestal and treat you like you're a queen. It's sort of like jumping off the pedestal and saying, okay, we can be, you don't have to treat me like I'm a queen. If he's willing to do that, that's great. If he doesn't, and he's saying to you up front, I'm not going to treat you like a queen. I'm going to treat you like somebody down here. If you're willing to say, okay, you know, then more power to you.
Different times. Totally different times.
My gender role alarm is going ballistic right about now.
I'm an old fashioned person. I'll admit that. I'm not going to deny that. You know, and like I'm saying, it may not be fair.
My mama said, and this should be this way and this way, and she still was doing stuff. So it's like, what? You going to say
this? But for real though, the other piece of that is that it's not only unfair for women, it's also unfair for men. Not every man is, like Sheila said, not every man is a leader. Not every man is gonna play that gender role in a relationship. Not every man is walking around with all of his masculinity and his, you know, things swinging all over the place, trying to be Mr. Whatever. And so that whole notion of having some of that angst, just the ability for men and women to truly be equals in a relationship and, you know, however that rolls. And to Winston's point, why do we even need all the histrionics to begin with? But if that's what you want to do and the two of you, like, it's going to be okay, like, then do it. You know, it's just not. And you know, to an extent, I do believe this, Cheryl, I believe men who have been traditionally raised, we are still not at the point where if a man isn't the first one to say, I love you, if a man isn't the one to ask them to propose, you might want to worry a little bit, maybe. And I'm just saying maybe, but only because that's the way we're socialized. I think that socialization needs to change.
No, yeah, and I can understand.
And it's white too. It's all white.
Also true.
All that's white. That's white stuff.
good.
That ain't how Africa was.
No, I'm not going to say that, but it's about Africa.
No, that's true. He is absolutely right. These are traditions that have come on the white man's side.
That's not what I thought you meant. I'm sorry, that's not what I thought you meant. I thought you were saying something else.
What you think I meant? Hold up, what's up?
No, that's okay. I was under a different impression. But no, you're right. And like I said, Brooke, I don't disagree with being able to do, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I just think, like in anything else, it's sort of that the whole idea is, believe people when they tell you who they are the first time. So just know what you're getting into, that's all. You could do whatever you want to do, if you want to propose on your knees like that, but understand how the foundation you've laid. So, and with that, we're going to close out because we got to lose one of our panelists. So, but we've always appreciated coming in and talking about a few issues of the week and solving all the problems that there are, right? Okay. So I thank the Old School News crew. Only got a couple left here, but thanks, Brooke Barrick.
Sawabona.
And thank you, Winston Thomas.
Oh, wow. I don't know any really foreign languages I can throw out there right now. Bye.
That's okay. Sheila had to step out right there at the last minute, but we appreciate all of them being here and speaking with us. And thank you so much for listening to us one more time. It's your girl, Cheryl, and the Old School News crew coming to you every week. Listen to our podcast, share it with others. And if you want to come on, yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com. Just send me a note and let me know. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye-bye.